Now I have to wait till I'm wired for sound. Well, the news in the last few days on the political and government front has stirred up a lot of thought. And we are beginning to realize that things are gravely amiss. And there seems to be no very clear solution as to how to correct the condition, because the condition at the moment involves nearly every aspect of mortal civilization in this country and in other parts of the world. The world is deeply in trouble. And the reason for this trouble has been a general failure to recognize that humanity has a responsibility for the planet on which it lives. We have considered life to be one grand opportunity to avoid trouble, and we have succeeded in getting ourselves into very serious trouble. Now, we like to think of the future, but some of the best thoughts that we really have come from the past. And I think the remarks and thoughts of Plato on the problems of government, very well taken. He said, any system of government that is intended to be of value will work if it is honestly administered. If the facts of life are kept clear, if the individual realizes that he is surrounded by honorable people trying to help him or trying to maintain the culture to which he belongs, things will go fairly well, whatever you call this system. Lacking integrity, no system will go well. There is no possibility of making dishonesty a permanent virtue for the race. We are in a problem that we have to face. Now, one of the interesting thoughts that have come down to us from the past on this intriguing subject has been this simple statement. An individual is not born a citizen of his country because he happens to be physically born in that place. He is not a citizen by birth. He is a citizen by dedication. And in practically all of the religions of antiquity, and I think especially of the higher periods of Egyptian culture, the creation of citizenship was a rite and a ritual, usually performed when the young person was between 14 and 16 years old. He was committed by himself and was old enough to know what that commitment meant and how he was part of a larger collective pattern. When he was about 14, 15 years old, he or she, either one, had the child lock cut off, their hair. Up to that time, they were regarded as innocent little children without sense enough to decide anything of importance. But when they reached about 15 or 16, they had to begin to think about the world in which they lived, their duty to it, what would do for them, and what they must do for it. Now, there was an elaborate ritual in connection with this type of recognition. The individual did not simply stand up and recite a constitution or a declaration of independence. He was tested mentally, morally, emotionally, physically, as to whether or not he had the stamina, the integrity, and the self-control appropriate to citizenship in a major world power. He had to proclaim his own citizenship and prove it. And he had to prove it by many different types of possibilities. Supposing he was trying to prove it today, he probably might be given a question such as, what is democracy? He wouldn't be asked to repeat the Constitution or pledge allegiance to the flag. He would be asked to show what he knows about a democratic system of life, how it can work, why it can work, and what can destroy it. He is expected to be, therefore, informed on the basic principles of government. Now, this seems to be perhaps a rather exaggerated condition, but we are in an exaggerated crisis. Suppose we recognize the possibility of the graduation from high school could be the separation between the young and the mature. At the time of graduation from high school, the problem of establishing citizenship could be clearly defined. Now, a person would not have to declare citizenship simply because he was born in the country. He could live here, work, have a good job, and take care of his family, and never be a citizen, according to the ancient rules. These rules were for persons who wished to become important factors in the world in which they lived. Citizenship gave sharing in the responsibilities, duties, and problems of government. Up to that time, the individual could well live in freedom, could be considered a perfectly normal citizen, but he would not vote on any issue of any kind. He would not pass rules on laws or take part in litigations concerning the government. He would not have anything to do with taxes or income or expenses. He would simply be living in whatever government existed at that time. If he wished to become a conscious member of a government, then he had to take the necessary tests. Now, for us, we probably wouldn't ask him to have tattoo marks put on his face at great pain to himself. Nor would we ask him to run 100 yards or something over rough rocks to prove his stamina. What we would be more likely to do now would be to try to educate him for citizenship if he wants it. And this education should begin in the kindergarten. He should begin by learning how to get along with other children 6 or 7 years old. As he goes along, every year of his study would include at least one major field of government. He would be taught from the beginning how a country is governed. And if he lives in a democracy, he would learn from the beginning the principles of democracy, its dangers, its advantages, its disadvantages, and how he could become an active member in making a contribution to the improvement of the system which he had accepted as right. If the young person reached 16 with a thorough knowledge of the working of government, we have quite a different proposition than what we have now. We would recognize the importance of these values. We would also learn from the ancients, the Egyptians and the Greeks, that anyone who has attained citizenship and then performs corrupt actions is deprived of his citizenship. That he is no longer permitted to become a citizen of a country if he is in any way contributed to the corruption of that country. It is his necessity to keep on the right side of facts, of truth, and of principles. And a person without principles and without integrity could not pass the examination and test for citizenship. He has to have character endorsed by the community he lived in, guaranteed by the teachers who assisted his childhood, by his family, by the community government, and by the neighbors, that he was a person or she was a person of integrity, honesty, and honor, kind-hearted, well-intentioned, and sincerely willing to work for the common good. If this test could not be passed, no citizenship. Their citizenship then became an honor, not something to be used, abused, and deceived. Citizenship was a distinction, and those who were citizens not only were expected to prove it every day, but gained a certain distinction for having accepted without qualification the responsibility of being a constructive member of the Commonwealth. Now, this is one way in which the ancients took hold of it. They made it very obvious and very evident that if you wish to be respected and if you wish to contribute to the endurance of a system, you would have to live according to the rules. And any loss of these rules would deprive you of citizenship And in growing up, you had not shown character, you would not be given citizenship in the first place. Now, this seems a rather strenuous method to approach something, but I think it has one rather simple phase that we could all benefit from, and that is the principles of government should be taught to all school children. It should not be reserved for the few, but anyone who is supposed to vote for a government should know what it is, what its pitfalls are, how it can be corrupted, how it has been corrupted, and how it can be preserved. The child should have this growing up. Otherwise, we are going to have this continual indifference at the polls, with no one really caring very much who gets elected or who is qualified. It is only by having a proper system to determine character that at least we will try to place the government of a nation in the keeping of its most responsible citizens, not just anyone who comes along with the price of publicity. Now, this begins something, but we can't stop here. The next question that arises naturally is, who is qualified to be a leader? How are we going to distinguish a proper candidate for a high office? We don't know it. We don't know them. We never will know them personally, most of us. We have no idea except what they say about themselves. And very often, this is definitely proven to be an unreasonable way of selecting candidates. The next thing that then would be to remember that we are now graduating high school students who have majored in government. It's on the high school level. Some will say, well, how can we do this? They're burdened already. Well, we could cut down on the athletics a little bit and get back into citizenship, which is going to be much more valuable for all concerned. But the young person who graduates from high school can and may, by the time he graduates, have decided a little bit about his own future. Let us imagine that of his own accord, of his own discretion, while not yet a citizen, he has decided that he wants to be a citizen and that he wishes to become part of a corrected and enlightened government. All right, the next thing is that we should be the proper higher educational facilities not only available to him, but within his means financially, and also within the understanding and conception that he has of life. In other words, if he graduates to be a major in government, he should make government a life work, a career. If he wants to be a banker, he can study banking. If he wants to be a physician, he can go to medical school. If he wants to be a lawyer, he can go to a legal institution. If he wants to be a member of a democratic government, he can go and take the necessary educational steps in a college or university of government. There should be a complete curriculum for a career, for a dedication, for a life work, in which the individual gains his degrees and recognition in a school dedicated to the production of governmental personalities. He should be in a school that makes ambassadors, secretaries, mayors, governors, senators, congressmen. All these things should be part of the career of a person who has chosen government as a life work. The problem that we have of trying to elect lawyers most of the time is not very successful. And the individual voting for the average person has no way of judging their true fitness or their true abilities. If a candidate is advanced as having a superior record in a school of accrediting government employees, he has at least some confidence that that these people know what they're doing. Having decided that this such an institution as this should exist, it becomes obvious that the career of becoming a part of democracy should begin early in life and should continue on, and its greatest responsibilities rest upon the level of integrities and all of these examples which will strengthen the principles of a free and independent nation. These things will have to be thought through in some way. Now, if from out of this particular situation, someone is graduated, he then can begin to recognize that government is financially not a political institution. Government is basically big business. It is an institution just exactly like any other powerful business organization. It is run or should be run by trained persons in every field who should be appointed, as people are today when they made vice president of a bank. They probably will hold that position for the rest of their lives. But they should be made to become part of the administration of government as a well-regulated business organization, capable of controlling and directing the resources of the country, with sufficient backing and stamina and proper intelligent membership to prevent the exploitation of the public purse. The government should be in the hands of an equitable, honorable business institution, graduated in government, dedicated to the service of the nation, and dedicated to the protection of all of the necessities of national life. There is no possibility of getting this situation untangled unless we are able to put it on a solid basis, free from exploitation, free from ulterior motives, and free from all kinds of political subterfuge. This is something that has to be, or we will never be able to get the situation under control. Once we do create, however, a government system, as we would a bank or a great monopoly or a great business organization, then we have the matter of promotion. Individuals in various levels of this system would be advanced according to their abilities and according to the openings made by retiring superiors. They would do exactly the same thing that is done in business. They might start as a district alderman and they might end up as a secretary of state. They would do whatever the skills that they possess entitle them to promotion for a life career. They are not going to move out of the unknown for 4 or 8 years and then disappear again and open a library. They're going to be here for the length of their business career. They're going to start with what they can get into at the beginning, the vacancies, as you find in business, and they're going to work up on a merit system until they reach whatever height their capacities permit. They will then remain in business, maintaining their positions, helping to train others to follow them, until retirement. Then they will retire under a definite pension in the same way as a business executive. Also, because of the fact that this is their home, their government, their institution, exists for them, permits them to live in a free world, and to have the advantages and privileges of a democratic viewpoint on life, these men or women or both will work for these governmental positions on reasonable salary basis. No one expects the person to live on nothing, but there's no reason why every politician should aim or hope to be a multimillionaire. This is not for the country's good, but for his own. A politician serves his own purposes, a statesman serves his country. And the difference must be clearly indicated, or we're going to be in more trouble than we know what to do with. But if we do develop an institution suitable to produce a proper escalated system of promotions, each individual advancing according to his capacities and his dedications, each person helping those above and below, with no personal ambitions other than the natural and honorable progressions that occur in a well-regulated business organization. If this is done and done properly, and it carries with it the distinction that it indicates clearly that the person is an honorable, dedicated citizen, this in itself is an honor almost equal to an honored degree in some foreign country. It is a sign of a true American citizen. And this is the thing that we're going to have or do something with. Now this produces another situation. No country can today exist alone. We are part of a world of nations, some of them so small that it appears to be ridiculous, and some so vast it becomes completely unwieldy. But all of these countries have relationships with us, and we have relationships with them. And we are no longer able to afford a relationship with other countries sustained and supported by nuclear armament or by treaties that are broken as quickly as they are made. This whole situation calls for another step above what we have now. And that other and next higher step is the world nation. It is that all the nations of the earth, like all the states of a union, are brought together in one grand over pattern, a pattern in which all are part of a brotherhood, a part of a democracy, part of a commonwealth. Whatever they wish to control or do within their boundaries must also be ethical. And a nation can be thrown out as easily as a citizen can be cast out for delinquency. There should be a world government. There should be an independent head selected from the governments of the world. This individual should have been through all the steps of government. No politician. No one picked out of nowhere. No one saw a previous college professor, newspaper editor, or legal light of some kind. Anyone occupying a serious position anywhere in the pattern must have grown up through a special training, a definite program of preparation for leadership. And these various levels of leadership will elect from among themselves those whom they regard as most likely to be valuable to the corporation or to the business. We will find out of that very shortly that a large part of our corruption will completely cease. There is no need for us to constantly worry about this situation if we would for once in our lives finally decide that the best answer is honesty. This is something we're frightened to death might be true. And many of the things that we most cherish in our daily life come to us through shady meetings, which we shall have to learn to get over. Now we have another set of problems to be coming in on us. And the environmentalists are already hard at work on those. And that is what we are doing with the planet itself. One of the main things that we have got to learn here is that this planet is not big enough, strong enough, or powerful enough to permit it to be used constantly for competitive purposes. There is no room for competition in a small planet. We are a relatively small planet. We are also a poorly managed one, and we are one in which waste has become the order of life. We are here not for the benefit of the future, but for the gratification of the present. This planet cannot and will not go on the way it is. And the only way to get rid of the problems of the planet is to get an honest government. Because without that, the changes necessary in conduct and in business relationships and in interplanetary use of natural resources cannot be estimated. So we have a planet of very limited resources. I have mentioned on other occasions that this planet is like an alchemical bottle. It is a bottle, and it has only so much in it. And if this bottle is emptied, there is no knowing what the future could be. We might suddenly realize that we are heading to join those dead moons that still circle here and there in space. We cannot exhaust the resources of the planet and survive. And the environmentalists can prove beyond any question that we are wasting these resources every day. And every day is therefore taking more than a day off of the life expectancy of the planet itself. We are not concerned with the projects which will preserve and protect the resources of the country. We are already faced with nuclear waste that we do not know what to do with. We are faced with constant diminishing resources of all kinds, and there has to be some definite plan that is larger than the selfish exploitations of separate countries, by the uniting of which, under one general heading, we can extend these resources as far as possible. And furthermore, gain in this way further time in which to seek for other and better solutions. We are heading in an absolutely death-bent course at the moment. Every resource we have, except wood, practically cannot be replaced. We are constantly using up the life of the planet. We are corrupting the atmosphere, polluting the water. We are continuing the use of various nuclear products for which we have no understanding. We have no way of knowing what we are doing. The only rule of the whole thing is the rule of money. As long as profits are possible, tomorrow is of no consequence. But in the problem of government, we must have also the conservation of all natural resources. We must find ways of stretching commodities as far as possible. We must save and conserve much that we now waste every day. We must conserve replacements wherever possible, whereas today the sale is buy a new one. Everything is wasteful, because waste is profit. But the profit of business is the loss of the world, and we can hardly wait to see something change this before it is completely too late. Now, in the same general phase as this particular situation, we have the very serious and definitely dangerous factor of the pollution of atmospheres and of the misuse of the natural atomic resources of the planet. We are mining out of the planet its very life. We are doing what we might do if we gave a person a tremendous bloodletting, that we are trying desperately to get another transfusion into our industry from the planet. These transfusions are exhausting the planet, and we are beginning to see in scientific calculations the gradual increase of destructive factors, the breaking down of the resources of the planet, with the possibility that we will all end in a completely debilitated, dead planet. This is something we don't want to look forward to. It is quite possible that something can be done to assist many of these things, but we have got to begin to use common sense over profit, or we're going to be in trouble. One of our latest additions to the list of difficulties is now the computer. We are on the face of a great change, which could be for the better, but is more likely to be for the worst. It is now possible, by means of a computer, for the complete control of the world to be ultimately vested in one or two persons. This is a very dangerous state of affairs, because it can ultimately end in a complete tyranny. The dictatorship and of the past of Alexander and Napoleon and Hitler actually achieved by means of a little instrument that sits on a table. Unless we use these various advancements with discretion, with discrimination, and with integrity, and we've got to go back to the public school again and get integrity back into the schoolroom, where it belongs. We cannot cure the world's problem unless we can create generations of honest people. We cannot create generations of honest people while the rewards all go to the dishonest, and that competition is regarded as the life of trade. It is not the life of anything. It is the destroyer of everything that is important in human nature. So we finally go to the next step of the situation, and that is currency, money. This is a very delicate situation, but I think we can say probably that money is the primary root of all the other evils. Money or profit of some kind, wealth, is probably the dominating motivation behind cupidity and crime. There are other secondary motives, some of them pretty important, but wealth and profit are the things which are at the present time endangering the survival of all of us. We are living on a profit system. We are trying to live off the interest on our debts. We are striving desperately to create a stable currency in a world in which the only enduring value is moral value, and we don't have that. Therefore, money is a misery and a misfortune unless integrity administers it. And we come right back again to the problems of integrity. These are the problems which include nuclear warfare, include all forms of competition and monopoly, all kinds of rebellions, revolutions, and anarchies. The problem, therefore, goes right back to the fact that we cannot live together in a complicated civilization without proper training, understanding, and dedication. Without these things, it is not going to be solved. And if it is much longer unsolved, we will have nothing to solve it with. It is really very, very serious at this time to bear up that the coming generation that must go into the new century must go in with a different basic concept of life. We've got to train young people not to continue to make our mistakes, but at least make some original ones of their own. We cannot keep on passing on the mistakes of the past to an unborn generation and expect anything to survive. So we go back to the problem of education, of integrity, and also the problem of preparing for a new century. We will find that nearly all of the corruptions of our generations, social corruptions, narcotics, things of this nature, all are arising from a desperate depression, a loss of hope, a loss of conviction of anything, a loss of belief in any integrity. A simple problem is be as comfortable as you can in a miserable situation. Do what you want to as long as you can, because pretty soon you won't be able to do anything. Well, this is no kind of a foundation upon which to build a new generation, a new civilization, or a new world culture. We've got to clean house in the years that remain. And the only place we can do it is to start, certainly, with the public school system. We can start by immediately incorporating into the schooling ethics, morality, and integrity. We have allowed moral values to decline. We have allowed the teachings of the great minds of the past to be ignored or corrupted or misinterpreted. We have tried desperately to be a materialistic generation and have failed utterly, because materialism is itself a dismal failure. Therefore, it is very, very necessary, if we want to go into the next century, to get to work now to clean house as much as we can. Now, in doing so, there are certain personal things that we can do if we want to. They may not at the moment seem terribly helpful, but if individuals come in sufficient number, they can change the course of destiny. The individual can try in every way possible to clean his own house, to make sure that his own relationships with life have integrity. He can modify his desires to keep track of the availability resources that he has. He can keep out of debt. He can escape the pressures of luxury. He can avoid entertainment that will corrupt him and his children. He can begin to be an honest person himself in those little things which can make up a great decision in the long run. One of the things that must be done is to strengthen the homes of the American people. When the home goes, we're gone, and it is weakening seriously. Confucius was the author of the famous statement, "As goes the family, so goes the nation, and as so goes the nation, so goes the world." We are losing the sense of family. We are losing loyalties. We are losing mutual consideration and support. We are emphasizing the desirability of infinite individualism. Each person wishes to do exactly as he pleases. He wishes to be free of all responsibilities, and in so doing, he is gradually going to be free from the responsibilities of a nation. The nation goes when he does not support it. As long as we ignore the burden of maintenance, we will find the world falling apart around us. We have to make these decisions. And for most people, the decision of bringing up younger people with a vision of the future is something that almost any family in the country can work with. But they have to set the example, they have to understand, they have to inspire, and they must prove to all, beyond all doubt, to their children, that the family and the home are the better way. The way of greatest security, the way of greatest happiness, and the way of greatest fulfillment. All these things must be part of a proper understanding of home. As the home disappears, we are going to find more and more broken down, disappointed, disillusioned people. Nearly every person who is at the present time antisocial has been hurt in some way by the calamities of our civilization. They have been hurt by a world which lacks all the graces that we assumed we possessed. It's very possible that the last century was a little smug, we'll all agree to that, but at least it was loyal. Loyalty to the family, loyalty to the community. All these were the great virtues. Today they are completely forgotten. We are loyal only to our own ambitions and appetites. We are also overlooking the effects of our mistakes upon our psychological integration. We are about 260 or 70 million Americans who are living under situations, tensions, and pressures that are bound to deplete health and depress the psychological integration. In other words, we are becoming a race of neurotics. We are becoming a race of disillusioned individuals who have lost faith in our world and lost faith in ourselves and are trying to take it out on narcotics or alcohol. This is not right, basically. The country is better than that. Our world is better than that. But we do not give the better part of it a chance. Now, there's one thing we can all do, and that is make it a personal responsibility to contribute as little as possible to the mistakes of society. We can try to live as clean and clear and right as possible. We can try to build a strong ethical relationship with life. Now, we are bound to know that honesty is going to bring a lot of business to bankruptcy because it is built on dishonesty. Almost anything we do that's right is going to bring down an empire. It is going to bring down the empire of those who have exploited us and each other, particularly in the last century. But it still has to be done. It is better for an era to go down than a world to cease. Now, how are we going to handle some of these very delicate issues that we have, for instance, in connection with morality and ethics in the public school? I think we must face the very simple fact that it is no longer something that we have to face. It is something that we can demand and secure by parents themselves will require it. If a sufficient number of parents want to see their children vote for better candidates and to see the community with better leadership, they will support the involvement of political or legislative education in the school system. Now, in this, we also have pointed out more and more of integrity. And the moment we come close to integrity, we get into a mysterious and complicated religious situation. Actually, efforts have been made to bring religious morality into the school system, and they have all failed. Now, they have failed probably because of the fact that it is already an obvious fact that religion is an economic debit. The religious individual is not going to do the things that the non-religious person will endure. We are willing to be corrupted unless our religion is strong enough to straighten us out. Now, religion must be involved in this in some way, but it does not have to be involved theologically. We have some remarks and thoughts concerning religion which we're saving for the next lecture of this series, which will be the last of this. But we are concerned with what we might term ethics, a philosophy of ethics. Ethics has been taught to the world since the dawn of time. Every nation has had its ethical structures. Every nation has wandered away from its ethics and fallen. Every nation of the past, no matter how strong it was, has failed and died from internal corruption. And therefore, we have to be very careful that we don't follow that pattern, that we do not permit the sins of the past to also grow and increase here in our generation and civilization. We have got to start in with something that can be accepted as basic integrity. And the most precious and useful area in which this should be done is among the young. Young people have got to be brought around a little bit, at least, to the recognition of the responsibilities of citizenship. I think this can be done. I think a new patriotism can be strengthened by letting these young people realize that they're working on a job that is of vital importance. They're not merely gathering around to have meetings and talk about something or to memorize something like the Constitution. They are to be gathered to do things, to make achievements, to accomplish something, and to prepare themselves to become citizens of this country. Therefore, if young people had the choice of earning citizenship by doing it right, we'd find probably a very large group of young people who will move in that direction. Young people want to be important. They want to be admired. They want to be regarded as very valuable parts of the community. And give them a job that is worthwhile, let them do it and reward them for it by the recognition they hope for, could very well start us off on an entirely new basis of relationships with each other, our nation, and our world. I would say the most important thing we can do at this time is to get into circulation as much literature as we can, dealing with the importance of a new standard of citizenship, a citizenship which is of importance and is reserved for those who have earned it. In Albert Churchwood, in his rather important work on signs and symbols of primordial man, emphasizes this system in connection with Central African native tribes. We find it in the Southwest, in the American Indian civilization. We find it all over the world, that the individual has to earn the right to be a part of his tribe. And in the Southwest Indian group, we have, for instance, vigil, which was one of the most important of the American Indian mystical observations. Young men, women, starting out in life in their teens, were supposed or expected to perform vigil. Vigil consisted of going out at night into a quiet place in the mountains or in the desert, placing the prayer flags upon the four corners of the world, and sitting in quiet meditation, whispering or munching under their breath only, "Father, show me the way." The Indian way was the term to represent integrity. Show us the way. Show us what we should do. Show us how we can do it. Give us the blessing of the Great Spirit. And these people sat quietly and meditated. "Father, show us the way." And in the middle of the night or at some strange time, the visions came. Perhaps the tired child fell asleep and dreamed. But whatever it was, something happened. Something showed the way. In one case, it came directly to my attention. One of these young men went out, and for 5 nights, he did vigil.